Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday, the day after Monday. Long weekend. I hope you guys had a great weekend. All right, who has seen Hamilton?
I did watch it last week.
Did you?
Last weekend.
On Disney?
I did.
Started watching it last night.
3 hours. But it goes really fast. And they actually built the intermission into it.
That was a montage.
This, I will confess, is my fifth time. I've seen it 4 times live. Fifth time watching it, and it still is. I've still seen stuff for the first time.
Just seeing it on TV, still, this is good for you.
Oh my God. And so my daughters and my wife singing the songs as they're being played while we're watching this, I wanted to crawl underneath the. But it's an amazing story, and I left feeling pretty patriotic about it. So it's that was probably the highlight of our weekend. We had to watch it July 3rd when it came out. All right, so let's transition into second half of this year. The first half, we've described this. We'll continue to describe it as probably the most tumultuous period in economic history. And we don't mean to exaggerate or be dramatic. It is a very serious impact on what's going on in the economy, but there's a disconnect. And, you know, we're up at the lake and everybody's got new boats and new RVs because they're like, well, I need to get out, but I got to stay socially distanced. So why don't we just do that? So real estate up there is going well. It's just people have looked at it and said, we're diving in. But the underbelly of the economy is continuing to deteriorate. So things to look out for, and we'll cover this in our economic outlook, but just as kind of a highlight here, the economy, we expect it's going to be close to a $1.4 trillion hit, which is roughly 7% of GDP that's been impacted. And remember that our GDP is heavy consumer sector. Over two-thirds is the consumer sector. So that's the part of the economy that's been hit really hard. And it's going to be a long recovery from the way that we look at it. So $20 trillion in the stock, the global stock of our economy, we think it's going to be down to 19. We'll see a negative number at the end of the day. The financial system, that's the other part of this that we're watching. And up until this point, we've kind of taken comfort that the banks following the financial crisis have adequate capital to support this. The stress test revealed that, yeah, there's adequate capital, but when they put the COVID test in there, several banks have had challenges. So the Fed is watching dividend payments now and stock repurchases. So there is concern that the reserve for loan losses isn't high enough, given what's about to come down the pike. Now, remember, the PPP money kind of starts to run out, money that was given. And so some of those companies I'm reading now, like Hopcat, filed bankruptcy, but took PPP money. So there's going to be more of these stories where they got the assistance and they still can't make it. And that's what the third quarter is going to be about, is this is where it really, if we can't open up the economy and get these businesses back up and running where they're profitable, they're hanging on by a thread. We're going to see higher folding or bankruptcies. So the financial system we expect is going to take a big hit the second half of the year. And then the capital markets, and this is the big disconnect, and we'll talk about this, Freddie, when we get into some of the valuation discussions. But the S&P 500 has done remarkably well in the face of this just massive deterioration in the economic picture, but really supported by monetary stimulus from the Fed and fiscal programs from the government. And a lot of it is still not well defined. So just the hope. Or the belief that the government's going to continue to throw money into the system to help support is really helping to keep these capital markets, financial assets at full valuations. Now, with that, things to think about in the second half of the year, we still don't have a way forward in sports, the football season. I've always said, we'll know that we're through the woods when the football season starts. So higher ed. I don't know if you guys saw it, but Harvard announced that they are going to have programs. Most of it's going to be moved online, so the freshmen will start this year, but then they'll go offsite for the second semester. The seniors will come back for their final semester, but tuition stays the same for your online education at Harvard. Like, okay, let's see if they can pull that off. Probably, if anyone can, Harvard. But in terms of overall, the overall college experience, I think individuals are going to be challenged to rationalize paying that kind of money for an online experience, and especially going into debt to do it. So we're going to be tracking student loans. We expect student loans actually to start to stabilize. Watch the unfunded pension liabilities. That's going to grow a bigger problem. And then municipalities, state and local government, municipal bonds are going to start to show problems the second half of the year, largely because of the deterioration in the convention business and those supporting those entertainment venues. And I think it's still not clear how much of that's going to be absorbed by the city, but anything supported by a hospitality tax or a sales tax is going to be a challenge. So with that, let me stop there. Anything that you guys would add to that, just as I unpack this, then we can dig deeper. All right, Adam, I'm going to turn it over to you this time.
Okay.
To start.
So I guess when we're talking about fixed income markets, it's kind of been a really quiet period. Feels like a lull. So I was looking at a 10-year treasury, and it really hasn't moved. I mean, it's moved, but we're at the same place we were on April 5th. So at 68 basis points. So you're not really, we're seeing the equity markets rally and continue to get stronger. The treasury market is still saying, hey, we're cautious. Ordinarily, you would see as growth prospects pick up, you'd see rates rising. So real yields are still negative 57 basis points compared to core CPI. And then globally, you've seen negative rates increase, so that total negative yielding debt across the world is back at $14 trillion.
So two things, though. We're at credit spread from where they were back in April.
So April credit spreads hit a peak of 350 OAS, and right now we're at 140.
Kids in the candy store.
Yeah, so we're over 200 basis points tighter from the peak.
And then how much new issuance did the market digest the first half of this year?
$1.5 trillion. So to give context, last year we did just at $1 trillion in 12 months. So in 6 months, we've surpassed the entire year. Some analysts are calling for that to taper off, which it has through the summer, when you would expect that. But what I'm reading, especially if we start to see a tick up in COVID again, is more people coming to market, especially with the Fed backing this. And now they're coming with a credit facility, a primary credit facility to help distress companies. So more people coming to debt in the back half of the year to keep their balance sheets with cash.
Something to think about too is that as we talk about the shift in democracy and the shift in capitalism, and one of the things that I'm starting to believe that is our corporate bond market. I was always taught the corporate bond market was a way for companies to access the market through publicly traded securities. And today I really am growing in the belief that what it really is a way for companies to restructure their balance sheets. They can use this as a way to term out their debt, but it's really as a market clearing mechanism that it was initially what it was taught that it was. It's really become a way for companies to facilitate restructuring their balance sheets
and then buy back their stock, right?
I mean, how many new issuers do you see out there?
Hardly any,
right? It's because of a divestiture.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we have seen it. I mean, Uber's a new company, so Uber comes to debt, and you know, Uber comes to market. Netflix has come to market, so there are new companies that have done that. But in terms of what we saw back in the 1980s, it's just a different, and the size of the market's huge. But it's just different because it's so concentrated now, and it's really just a way for companies to term out their debt. And so part of what we're seeing in this new issuance, the duration of these bonds tends to be longer.
Yeah. Or a coupon longer.
What's the longest bond you've seen come to market so far on the credit side?
I would say in a typical company, what we saw, a 60-year bond was kind of the new norm, which it wasn't like it was one-off. And we've had one-off 100-year bonds, but Petrobras came with a 100-year bond. But I would say we consistently saw 40 and 60-year bonds coming to market.
And then from a technical standpoint, this is for the nerds on the call, this is interesting, but for the rest of us, it may not be. But the 10-year, it used to be that a 10-year with a 7% coupon or a 6% coupon had a duration in the 6.5 to 7 range. But now, because these coupons are so low, a 10-year security has a duration of what?
9.5 years.
9.5 years. It's just the length of these durations now has extended out because coupons have declined so much, which that means the interest sensitivity of the instrument that we're buying is pretty high. So it means managing these portfolios, just keeping a focus on what is duration. You can't just do it because you're going to have X percent in the 10-year any longer because that is a long duration. So, Freddie, let's talk about equity markets. What you got?
So just to really quickly cover S&P valuation, right now we're at almost 23 times earnings, which is pretty stretched, especially given that earnings for this upcoming quarter are expected to decline by about 20% year over year. So there's a lot of stocks in certain sectors that are going to have a tough earnings season. But at the same time, there are a few places you can look with solid outlooks. And this includes technology. There's a reason the NASDAQ is up 13% year to date. That's probably where the earnings growth is going to be. Makes up almost 30% of the S&P right now. But the earnings did just start for the second quarter last week. We've had a few companies report that have had solid reports. And to cover those real quick, Micron earnings were 82 cents a share on $5.44 billion in revenue. That's up 14% year over year. There was strong demand from the cloud giants. There are more investments to support the spike from COVID lockdowns. And even guidance was actually strong for the fourth quarter, with growth of 18 to 28%, which is well above consensus. Microsoft and Sony have a new console coming out at the end of the year and the PS5. So that probably played a big role in their guidance. And semiconductors in general were up 2% on the day Micron released. And then the other company was FedEx. You're not going to hear anyone say this often, but they had really, really good earnings this time around. Stock was up over 14% on its release. They beat earnings by a dollar and revenue by over $1 billion. Domestic residential volume was up 72% for the fourth quarter. And then FedEx Ground reported a 20% revenue.
I always feel like FedEx is one of those companies that just continually guides lower and then surpasses it.
Yeah. I mean,
no one's shopping in the store, so getting it delivered, right? I guess I'd say conversely, to some of those strong earnings, S&P, what you say, expected to be down 15%?
Yeah, 15, 20.
So looking at Russell 2000 small caps, earnings expectations for this quarter are to be down 85%.
Wow.
Revenue is going to be down 15%. And while energy makes up a decent amount of that, consumer discretionary, that sector within the Russell 2000 is expected to be down 142% on earnings. So, when you're looking, we keep saying this tale of two markets, small caps are just continuing to just struggle.
Yeah, this is, just as an analyst trying to tag, you're really trying to predict revenue because we don't have stability now. So the revenue line, when the revenue line gets hit, then being able to model margins and costs, allocating fixed costs to businesses, and then the variable cost becomes much more difficult. So, and then to take it up a notch, looking at the valuation at the S&P 500, and by the way, for anybody on the call, if you ever want any of our valuation models, just call us and we'll send you a spreadsheet of them. But if we took earnings, so next year's earnings, what are we looking at? 170, 150?
It'll be next year. It'll be 170.
What's the growth rate assumed on that?
Over 6%.
Yeah, so that's, just looking at that, what is a stretch, and then what multiple do you put on that?
21 times, right?
So where does that put the S&P then?
Close to 3,000.
So to move it past 3,000, so have it rally from here is a real stretch, unless we assume that we've got a really growth rate behind us. But you have to take the top 10 stocks or the top five stocks out of it, and then you look at what's left in the, and then look, can you really see that growth rate coming next year? And a lot of that is in industries and sectors like REITs and financials that have been beat down, and energy. I think it's going to be a real challenge. So it's unmasking, getting into the detail of the index, I think, is going to be the rewarding thing for analysts to do. Charlie, how's the summer reading going?
It has not picked up yet. No, I spent too much time watching Hamilton over the weekend.
All right, so confession, I switched gears on my reading, on my summer book. I pulled out, and we've talked about this book over the years. It's called How the West Was Lost by Dambisa Moyo. And she's an economist from South Africa, or no, from Zambia, and Oxford educated, PhD, and has a really interesting view of how resources are being squandered in the United States and how China is much more efficient in allocating its resources, and its economic engine will blow by the United States. And in this pandemic, I think it's really accelerating that view. So I wanted to refresh my view. If anybody would like a copy of that book and that's listening, just send us an email and we'll get something. We'll get it sent out to you. I ordered 20 more of those. So, okay, Charlie, over to you. What do you got going?
So I want to sum up the first half of this eventful 2020 in high yield. It shouldn't come to be any surprise that the bright spots in high yield were few and far between. The high yield index is over 250 basis points wide on the year. And among the different ratings, only double Bs are positive with total return, positive in total return, but are still trailing treasuries by almost 9%. And then when you look at sectors, wireless was the winner for the first half. Wireless high yield debt has seen about 5% total return, which beats the next highest by about 3%. That outperformance is mostly due to the Blockbuster T-Mobile Sprint merger. That sector has likely run its course. It's also the tightest sector with a option adjusted spread of only just over 300 basis points. Other safe havens and high yield that investors could have found were the banking insurance sectors with full returns over 1%. And then it shouldn't be surprised that the usual suspect utility was also an outperformer in high yield weakness with about 1.25% year-to-date total return. So looking what did not work, these results should be even less surprising. Accounts invested in independent energy or oil field services names could expect to lose 18% and 37% respectively. It should be said that some of those names that look poised to emerge out of this period have rallied since April, but those losses remain inflated with a lot of these companies will eventually file bankruptcy, and you've already seen it from Whiting Petroleum and Chesapeake Energy. Some sectors that may be ready to outperform the latter half of the year include gaming and healthcare. Both of these high yield sectors have seen negative returns year to date and have spreads over 550 bips. If one were to believe that states reopening will continue, that should provide us a boon to gaming companies, and build out of online sports books has been streamlined in states like Illinois, and that may be seen in other states. Healthcare is a pretty diverse sector, but with spreads still wide, you may be able to pick and choose your spots to benefit on combating the current pandemic in this environment. And just one last note with energy, I don't want to make too much of a habit of this, but we did reach a little bit of a milestone benchmark in this coronavirus environment. We did last week reach over $40 a barrel in WTI crude, which that is a number that many energy companies have advised is workable. So that should prove helpful in high yield and investment grade spreads, but that the percentage gain there was due to stronger than expected jobs numbers, which could be pretty easily wiped out in the coming months too. So
again, we talk about the evolution of democracy and capitalism, but how does our form of capitalism in the energy sector, where we have creditors and individual shareholders, compete with nationally owned oil companies like Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Venezuela that can manipulate the price of oil? I'm convinced that move in March was really designed just to really flush out the United States oil industry and to let them know OPEC is
his pricing power.
And it's really now OPEC plus, because it is the conventional OPEC, and
yeah,
Russia is just with them right now.
Okay, so let's close this out. End of the year, you think the equity market's higher or lower, Adam?
Same.
Brady?
I'd probably say a little bit higher.
Charlie?
I'll go lower on this one.
The anesthetic that the monetary stimulus is. I'm going to go lower on that one. Okay, football season. Yes or no? Thumbs up. Do you think we get a football season?
Thumbs down. I don't think there is a sports season that finishes this year.
Freddie, how about you?
I'll say yeah. Football?
Football?
Yeah. I'll say no, looking at what NHL is going through, mostly getting to football.
Yeah. You know the phrase, whistling past the graveyard. I feel like as a society, we're somewhat in denial, not just a river in Egypt, somewhat in denial and just whistling past the graveyard right now. As we're in this moment of, it feels like the economy is doing okay. The capital markets are reflecting that, but the underbelly is we don't have answers yet for some of the important things. So listen, with that, we're going to sign off. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.